And welcome, deep welcome to the first in our series, our second series on the Spandakarikas, the stanzas on vibration, our second series on the profound action of Shakti, goddess, the vibratory power, both to create a life that feels separate and disconnected, and to create a life that feels alive with unity consciousness. So I want to say a little bit about the text that we're working with, especially for those of you who were not in the first class. And if this is old information to you, which sometimes these housekeeping details are, please just take it as an expression of Spanda bringing our attention into this moment as we prepare to engage with a truly ecstatic and life-transforming text that is really the container for our experience in the next 6 weeks. Spandakarikas, the verses on vibration, the verses on the primordial vibratory power, whose other name is Shakti, which bodies forth out of its transcendent Shiva Shaktiness to become all that is. These verses were written around the 9th century of the Common Era, according to scholars, probably by a disciple of a great early guru of Kashmir, whose name was Vasugupta. The Spandakarikas is the companion volume to one of the most mysterious and important books in the northern Indian Shaiva tradition, the Shiva Sutras, literally the aphorisms revealed by Shiva, by that underlying consciousness, the ground of being, who also, of course, takes a form especially adapted for meditation, who takes the form of that beautiful yogi seated on a mountaintop in the Himalayas. And these verses, the Shiva Sutras, were said to have been revealed to Vasugupta in a dream. Vasugupta was a hermit, a sage, living near Srinagar in what is now modern-day Kashmir. And in the dream, he was told to climb a nearby mountain, and there he would find 77 aphorisms carved on it. He was told in the dream these words were revealed by Shiva, by God himself, God itself. Please take them, write them down, and disseminate them to your disciples as the true teaching of how reality is. So Vasugupta did this. He, after receiving this revelation, or what he experienced as a revelation, and I would say that those sutras certainly have the cryptic quality of revelation. They have been commented on and contemplated for centuries, and they actually require contemplation and comment to understand. But they are enormously powerful as an explanation, as a way of tuning into the nature of reality. The first sutra of the Shiva Sutras, in Sanskrit, it says Chaitanyam Atma. Atma means self, literally means itself. It means the self-referential awareness that is our inmost being. And the first word, Chaitanyam, means consciousness or awareness, which is totally free, totally expanded, completely without limitations, and having within itself the power to create, manifest, dissolve anything that can be imagined or anything that is unimaginable. And that first sutra, Chaitanyam Atman, actually points to the fundamental identity between that consciousness, which we might call cosmic consciousness or foundational consciousness or the ground of being or God or the Tao, it points to the identity between that consciousness and our own awareness, our own consciousness, which, as the text and the text that we'll be talking about today, the verse we'll be talking about today, points out, when that awareness is free of any thoughts and perceptions, it has the capacity to expand back into what it is. In other words, you and I have the capacity and have the destiny, I would say, to recognize, to rediscover, to see our identity with that great consciousness. So the first sutra, the self, is free consciousness, Chaitanyam Atma, is followed by a second sutra which describes the problem. And that sutra, it's two words, Jnanam Bandha, translated as knowledge, that is to say the knowledge that comes through mental cognition, binds or traps us by limiting the freedom of pure awareness. That's a kind of commentarial translation. The sutra itself just basically says knowledge, bondage. It kind of speaks pidgin English. It's a sutra, which means that there's a lot of wisdom contained in two hopefully easy to memorize words. So the Shiva Sutra then goes on to describe many, many facets of the journey, the enlightened state, the secrets that empower mantras, some of which we'll be talking about today, the powers that come to us through meditation, the possible delusions that can occur if we misunderstand the source of these powers, and much more. And after this text had been studied and contemplated by Vasugupta's disciples, his disciple Kalata undertook, probably with Vasugupta's guidance, to write a series of sutras or verses which could be a companion volume to the Shiva Sutras, which described the process of manifestation and the process of self-recognition from the point of view of the creative power within consciousness, that is, from the point of view of Shakti, from the point of view of Spanda. And truly what this text aims to give us is a kind of breadcrumb trail that points to how we can tune in to this, to the energy inside our own body, inside our own breath, inside words, inside the process of desire, etc., such that we begin to recognize what it is that's actually driving our lives, driving our breath, driving our heart, driving our thoughts, driving whatever it is that we experience. And then, in a certain sense, this is how I like to think of it, ride that energy wherever and however she appears. We're going to call that energy she in this class because it's cozier and because when we really tune into the Spanda energy, we do get a definite sense that it has what we could call a feminine quality to it, even though, of course, it's beyond gender, definitely transgender. So what I'd like to say here about the text, the Spandakarikas, is that it's actually a guru. The text itself is a guru. And when I say that it's a guru, I don't mean that it teaches us something in words. I mean that it contains within itself the enlightened awareness that actually transmits itself to us as we contemplate it. You know, the word guru, as many of you know, signifies that one who leads you from ignorance to truth, from darkness to light. One of the meanings of the word is literally dark to light, gu meaning dark, ru meaning light. But the guru in the tantric tradition, again, this is something that many of you know, guru in the tantric tradition is not a human being, even though human beings certainly do channel the guru and act as gurus in the world of in the relative world. But in the deepest sense, guru is the very principle of awakening, of spiritual awakening itself. In other words, it's that spark within the soul and within the universe, which is an aspect of the Spanda Shakti, which wants to wake us up to itself. And that principle, that awakening power, acts through many vehicles. One of the most important of these vehicles is the sacred texts of the different traditions, particularly the non-dual traditions, the traditions which, far from asking us to believe in a kind of fundamentalist view of reality, actually point us to the fundamental oneness of the energy that underlies everything and of the pure being that underlies everything. And when such a text is handed down through a practice tradition as a living entity, when it's taught by those who have been awakened to the meaning of the verses, and when it's invoked in contexts like this one, where these truths can be heard and deeply taken in and practiced, these teachings, these words, have the power to transform your awareness very quickly, sometimes instantaneously, but more often, that's certainly been the case with me, over time, as you allow them to pickle, to cook, to transmit themselves into your awareness. So the Spandakarakas is really one of the most important of the texts that have come out of this particular non-dual tantric tradition. It carries with it an empowerment that many of you have experienced in the first class, in the first series, that can and does connect us to the mystery at the heart of reality, which is also the mystery in our own heart. And, you know, again, I just want to say that inner heart, that mystery is sometimes called the center of everything, the heart, the absolute, Brahman, God, Goddess, Tao, Shiva, Shakti. There are many other names for it. Pure awareness, bliss. It is stillness and peace. And it's also ecstatic pulsation, a subtle weaving of energy and light that arises inside the great silence and dances into innumerable worlds in our own daily experience, dances into manifestation as our own sense of individuality, as our mind and senses, as our physical body with its cells and neurotransmitters and inner processes and bacteria, and finally as the entire physical world. So, you know, one other piece of, let's call it scholarly pointing out, the Spandakarakas is part of the tradition that we call Tantra. Tantra, again, has many meanings. It refers to a particular group of texts and practices which date from as early as 500 CE, but are probably based on much older traditions. And there are a few distinguishing features of Tantra that are important and that the Spandakarakas incarnates. One is that it's based on the recognition that a single energy is playing at every level of existence, from the subtlest to the most physical. In other words, that incredibly subtle consciousness that we've mentioned earlier exists in the transcendent, and it exists inside every atom of the immanent. Another of the features of this tradition, of these traditions, is that it's filled with practices for specifically drawing sacred energy, sacred power into yourself. In other words, It's filled with practices that are aimed at making you experience the divinity of your embodied self. And specifically, tantric traditions are distinguished by the fact that they work a lot with deity energies, with deity visualizations, with deity mantras, with placing deities, that is, energies which are connected to very high and subtle realms of consciousness. Placing these deities in the body, identifying with deities, and most of the practices that we do in the modern world, which work with the kind of visualizations where we imagine a sacred presence and bring that presence into ourselves, are based on tantric presences, tantric practices. So another aspect is, because tantra recognizes the physical world as sacred, most true tantric texts aim not only at liberating ourselves from suffering and delusion, they aim not only at giving us the experience of higher realms, but they also aim at opening us to our highest capacity for enjoying ourselves and the world, in other words, for loving our lives. The true tantra, the true non-dual tantra, worships the world as an aspect of Shakti, and so there is none of that world-denying thing that occurs in many mystical traditions where we subtly or actively diss the physical world and our own bodies and our own desires and human needs in the service of attaining a transcendental experience, a transcendent experience. In Tantra, the aim, the goal, it really is integrating the higher realms into our physical body, and that the way I put that is very important. In other words, we're not trying to take ourselves out of the body and enter a higher world, although that will definitely happen for many of us, and maybe often happen during meditation and other practices. The aim is to bring the higher worlds, to draw the experience of the higher worlds into our bodies. And this understanding accounts for the fact that tantric philosophy and tantric practices point to many different doorways for opening our body as well as our mind and awareness to the vastness that underlies us. And these doorways, as again many of you know, include mantras. They include visual practices with mandalas, with geometrical forms, of course, deity images, breath, which is a crucial part of any meditative practice, the energies of the channels and the chakras, because the understanding of Kundalini and the inner energy body, what we call the chakras, the inner channels, all come from the tantric texts. But they also show us how to find doorways into the inner vastness through the actual field of the mind, through the sensations in the physical body, through our imagination, and through our sense experiences, whether they're pleasant or unpleasant. So Tantra is a tradition that has these characteristics and one other, which is very important, which is that tantric traditions tend to emphasize the feminine, tend to emphasize goddess, if not as the preeminent energy in the universe, at least as the co-energy, the co-equal energy with the divine masculine, which is the way most religious traditions describe the absolute. They describe the absolute as a still, silent, steady, attributeless, qualityless presence that usually is given in devotional traditions the name He. The tantric traditions stand for the fact that this divine transcendent He-ness is inseparable from His feminine aspect, which is His energy, His Shakti, His bliss, His power, his capacity for three important words that we'll come back to, for willing, knowing, and acting in Sanskrit, Icha, Jnana, and Kriya. So in Tantra, power is considered feminine, not feminine in a gendered sense. This is not a tradition that, this is a transgender tradition, but gender in the sense of really recognizing that the capacity which generates, sustains, and dissolves us and everything else is essentially a feminine power, and an active power. So, and there's one other thing I want to say about Tantra before we chat and meditate and go on to the verses that we'll be talking about today. The definition of Tantra that I really like comes from the etymology of the word itself. So the first syllable, tan, means to spread, to propagate, to expand. And the second syllable, tra, means to save or to protect. So Tantra is that which spreads protection, which spreads salvation, which spreads liberating grace, liberating power. And in other words, to put it poetically, Tantra, and this text in particular, is one of the ones which is most powerful in this regard. Tantra is the expansion of the liberating impulse of the divine, which has the intention and the effect of liberating us, of freeing us from the suffering that comes from feeling ourselves to be small, limited, and surrounded by a hostile world that we need to constantly grab things from and hold off, from which we need to grab what is pleasant and attractive and push away what is not attractive. So the wisdom that Tantra propagates is, again, the nuanced truth that we are not different from the ultimate reality. And it aims at pointing out to us how to find that reality in such a way that we're never separate from it, even when our daily life is full of challenge and difficulty, physical pain, and even at the moments when we leave the body, though Tantra really holds the promise to give us this experience while we're inhabiting the body. And so it, in every moment, these teachings in this text, and especially the divine intention within them, protect us from the suffering that arises when we don't recognize our fundamental interconnectedness. So, the tantric narrative is, you are not different from the Supreme Consciousness. It's a very, very uplifting narrative. And perhaps we could say the central question that that this text offers us and that the tantras offer us is, does what you believe, does what you understand, does it uplift you? Does it inspire you to question your conditioned assumptions? Does it give you a way to look at your life that lets you celebrate your own journey? Does it help reveal the truth to you? So this is what the Spandakarikas aims to do, is really to uplift you, to help you question your conditioned assumptions, to offer you a way of looking at your life that lets you celebrate yourself, and that, above all, reveals the truth to you and shows you how to keep your view of reality aligned to truth. So, in many different ways, this text brings us into that which is called in the tradition self-recognition, to recognizing the fact that awareness, which is totally free and filled with luminosity and power, which exists in every particle of the known world, which is infinitely creative and playful, which through its playful aspect, its creative aspect, its power called Spanda, the ecstatic overflowing impulse to experience ourselves in different forms takes birth as you and I. She takes birth as you, as your body, as your mind, as your senses, as the entire world of your experience at this moment, including the clothes on your body, the plastic water bottle that some of you may have sitting next to you, the water in it, especially your senses, your cognitive processes, your physical structures. And in order to make this experience of being you possible and of being all of us and all of this possible, she disguises herself within this very apparatus. She conceals herself inside the variegated world she has manifested and in certain individuals, that is to say, you and I, really, and others who have reached this point in our evolutionary development where the Shakti that is keeping us believing in limitation is wanting to reveal that there is no such thing as limitation. She wakes us up. She wakes us up to what it is that's living as you. And then you begin to be able to recognize Spanda as the source of every part of your experience. So we're going to chant the first verse of the Spandakarikas, which hopefully you guys have on your chant sheets, which I know Deb sent to you, or which you hopefully were able to download from the website. And the verses offer salutations to Shankara, to that which is the source of all reality. That which is called Shankara is the awareness aspect of the divine, sometimes known as the consort of Shakti. And Shankara is the source of the powers of what the text calls the wheel of energies, the wheel of Shaktis, who constantly expand and contract awareness. And what this verse says is that when awareness expands, then the sense of separation disappears. When awareness contracts, we feel separate and different and in all ways contracted. And that this movement of expansion and contraction is the fundamental movement of life. So we pay honor to this process by honoring Shankar, the source, the Shivaness, the stillness at the heart of reality, and simultaneously honoring Shakti, who is that which expands within and is empowered by that source.
Yasyonmeshanimeshabhyam jagatam pralayodayau tad shakti chakra vibhava shankaram paramam sumaha.
So we praise that Shankara, who is the source of the wheel of energies which continually bring about the expansion and dissolution of experience. And we're going to now chant another verse, which is the mantra string, as I call it, that we've chanted all through the last course, which again is also on your chant sheets. These mantras invoke the primordial Shakti, the Spanda, the vibrating, resonating pulsation at the heart of everything. These mantras invoke Spanda in as four of the faces of Goddess through the syllables Om, which actually is the syllable that brings the presence of Shiva, the divine masculine, into the mantra, Ayim, which represents the the creative inspiration which begins all processes. Hrim, which represents the power that manifests all these worlds out of that original creative vibration. Kleem, which expresses the felt sense of ecstatic pleasure that is one of the hallmarks of Shakti and one of the secret essential aspects of this tradition. And it then goes on to invoke a fierce form of the goddess, a fierce face of the goddess, Chamunda, who dissolves all our obstacles, who destroys the obstructive qualities of the ego, who gives us the power to know and to do whatever is needed to succeed in our journey. So the whole mantra sequence goes, Om, Om Aim Hrim Kleem Chamundaye Viche Swaha. Viche means cut. Swaha is the great mantra of offering that really empowers all the other syllables of this mantra. This is a mantra that is offered again and again in sacred ceremonies called yajnas, fire ceremonies, dedicated to the divine feminine. The priests who chant these mantras over a fire, and they say them hundreds and hundreds of times. So one of the qualities that gives power to these mantras is that they literally have been chanted with great intention for hundreds of years by very adept priests who put their entire life into extracting and bringing divine power into these mantras. So we'll chant this verse 9 times, and you can follow my lead. So let's find ourselves a posture that's upright and that allows the base to sink into the seat, into the floor, so that you do feel grounded and supported. And then take a deep breath in, letting the inhalation ground you even further, and a breath out. And with the exhalation, feel that the spinal column elongates very naturally upward through the crown. Just let yourself be present with the breath. One of the qualities of the awakened Spanda Shakti is that she shows us that the world, which in certain states of consciousness, limited states of consciousness, may appear to be hostile or simply as external to us, that the external world, including the air around us, is actually imbued with the loving energy of the Spanda Shakti. So as you become present to the breath, feel as though the particles of air that are flowing in and out as we prepare to chant are filled with love, are filled with grace, are filled with Shakti. Om Aim Hrim Kleem Chamundaye Viche Swaha. Om Aim Hrim Kleem Chamundaye Viche Swaha. Om Aim Hrim
Chamundaye viche swaha. Om Aim Rim Klim 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 Chamundaye viche swaha. So you can let the breath come to its natural rhythm. We're going to just take a few moments to perform one of the foundational meditative acts of self-recognition. So allow a part of your awareness to be present with the breath. Feel the way in which the breath can actually flow in and out, not only through the nostrils, but imagine that it's able to flow in and out through your pores, which is actually the truth, so that you can begin to feel as though there is a natural, energetic, let's call it an empowerment, that is flowing into you with every breath. As in a line that I often repeat, a line from Rumi, I have been forgetful every moment, but never has this flowing towards me stopped or slowed. And he is talking about the flow of grace, of love, of beauty, which actually flows to us through the breath. So just let yourself feel that flow. See if you can allow the breath to lengthen and deepen as if you were a baby breathing in deep sleep. Let go for a moment of the belief and the feeling that the breath is being drawn in and out of a solid, dense body that has a location in time and space. Recognize that there is no such thing as an experience of the body. And realize that that sound is not being experienced by a set of ears, but is actually taking place inside a vast, borderless ocean of awareness. And have the sense that this ocean is completely pervaded by a pulsation which might be taking the form of thoughts or of breath or of silence, which might be experiencing itself as bodily sensations. And keeping the breath flowing in this way, see if you can allow the vibrational configuration that you would normally call my chest to come into your attention. That chest sensation is slightly denser than the vibration of the breath. It's made of the same stuff, but because it's denser, it feels like something solid. See if you can feel that this collection of sensations that you ordinarily call my chest is actually just pure sensation, and see if you can recognize for a moment that when you drop the labels, the names, chest or breath or body, what there is pulsation, is radiation, is something that actually has no words, but which is experienced as a kind of vibratory felt sense. And see if you can keep breathing with this feeling as though you were deeply asleep. And see if how with every inhalation and exhalation you sense the subtle energy of breath seeping into the sensation called my chest. As though a transparent space seeped into a dense cluster . See if you can feel how, with the inhalation, as the breath seeps into the sensation of what you call your chest or your body, notice how the sensation of chest begins to be more and more permeated with the subtle energy of breath. And begin to feel how as the subtle breath mingles with the sensation of chest, the quivering vibratory experience called my chest, that vibration softens and relaxes and opens. Feeling that The breath expands now. Into the emptiness of awareness that is into a kind of knowing spaciousness, silent, empty and aware, and feel that that is doing the breathing, that this vast space is breathing, and in the middle of the space there is this rippling, quivering vibration called my chest, and just let the breath infuse its vastness and subtlety into the chest, and then with the exhalation feel that it flows out in all directions. Flows out through the whole surface, front, sides, and back of this area of sensation. So that there begins to be a sense of the quivering, radiant vibration of the chest mingling with the subtler vibration of the breath, and both of them beginning to open up into this sense of a vaster, wider awareness, permeated with knowingness and love that is actually doing the breathing. And that awareness, which you may have started to get a sense of, is like an ocean pulsing constantly into waves and bubbles, and that within it there is this constant pulsing, this vibration. And this vibration is spanda, this vibration is shakti, this vibration is the very source and the very essence of all your experience, whether it's the sensory experience of sensation or perception or sight, whether it's the feeling of the touch of your hand against the chair, whether it's the tingling or pressure of a sensation in the body that might feel pleasant or not so pleasant. Or of the thoughts and feelings that you experience in the mind and that you identify as perhaps a subtle aspect of yourself, but still as yourself. And what we're going to try to practice with this week is an understanding of what it means to tune into that energy, that vibration, that spanda, and allow it to expand our sense of self by understanding, really deeply tuning into where sound and words arise from. So you can open your eyes. And you don't have to. I'm going to just take a moment or two to review some of the main points that we covered in the last class, just to refresh your memories for those of you who were here and also for those of you who weren't here. So in the last class, as we were just doing, we looked into the awareness that's always present behind sensation and perception, and how that awareness makes experience possible, and how our experience of ourselves and of our thoughts and of our history is actually supported by that awareness. We looked at some of the ways in which what we think of as our personal experience is actually an expression of spanda acting through our individual bodies and minds. In other words, we looked at the fundamental choicelessness of our embodied experience. One of the karakas that we looked at was karakas number 6 and 7, which says that we ourselves are not the drivers of our thoughts and desires, that our thoughts and desires are actually always being created moment to moment by the Spanda Shakti. So what this means, and what many of you recognized, is that despite what many of the spiritual traditions say, we can't get rid of desire. Our desires may be the result of our conditioning, of biological imperatives, or they may have evolved into higher longings like the desire for growth or freedom or for truth. They may be sexual, they may be longings for intimacy, they may be longings to create something specific, a dance or a program or a novel. But desire itself is an unstoppable force, and so what we learn to do in Tantra is to refine desire, to partner with the impulse of desire, so that it serves our growth rather than trapping us in all the ways that we know desire can trap us. Not because we believe that some desires are better than others, but because desire and intention are such a powerful engine that we really want to learn how to partner with that force of desire so that it uplifts us, so that it serves our ultimate desire. And we also, in the last class of our series, looked at how our thoughts and feelings are actually the product of Spanda, actually the product of a particular form of Spanda Shakti called the Matrika Shakti. Matrika, if you remember, means little mother, and it refers to the phonemes, the sound syllables of the alphabet, which, according to the tradition, one of the most important teachings in the tradition, actually have the power to transform our experience, because words and sounds are not just empty. Words and sounds are actually infused with the primordial power of the Spanda. We discussed a verse which says that the power in words is always trying to conceal our true reality, our true vastness, taking form as ripples and waves in our inner world, and as my guru used to say, unstoppable, just like the force of desire. You can't make the mind get quiet. What you can do, however, is recognize the power and the fundamental beauty of that force that is driving thoughts and feelings. Learn how to look into it and behind those movements so that we can really take ourselves to the source. And this week, we're going to continue the process that we began in week 6 of the last series, looking deeper into the power behind words and sounds and speech of mantra, and into the process by which speech gets empowered, and by which we can use speech and sound, and especially mantra, to take us deeply, more and more deeply, into ourselves. So the verse that we'll be practicing with this week and that we'll be studying over the course of the week is verse 48. And that verse says, Shiva's power of action, which is another way of describing the Spanda Shakti, residing in the ordinary person, when it is understood, residing in the ordinary person binds you. Shiva's power of action residing in the ordinary person binds you. In other words, the Spanda Shakti is that power that's responsible for when it, as it acts through your neurological processes, through your body and mind and senses, through the powers of perception, is wired so as to give you the experience, as we were saying earlier, that the world is outside you, that some things in the world are friendly to you and some things are hostile, and that you yourself are a separate person with an entire frame of conditioned experience who is succeeding or failing or being loved or not loved, who is smart or stupid, who has all these qualities that are the product of our conditioning and our beliefs and of our experience, and especially of the way we frame our experience. So in these ways, Shiva's power of action binds us. But when that power is understood and set on its own path, this very power, this Shakti, bestows the fruit of yoga, bestows self-realization. So this is really one of the most important verses in the Spandakarikas, obviously, because it describes the fact that the Spanda has these two aspects, this aspect which we could say deludes us and this aspect which frees us. And I want to tell you one of my favorite stories, which is a story that some of you have heard me tell before, but which really is a parable for this process. And the story goes that in one of the innumerable moments in cosmic time when the dark forces of the universe, who are of course the dark forces inside all of us, had taken over the entire world and were enslaving humans in various addictions and dependencies and in general making life very full of suffering and conflicts between various forces. And finally, the gods, the light forces of the universe, came to see Lord Vishnu, who is the power, the deity who sustains the worlds, although it's actually his Shakti, Lakshmi, who does most of the work of sustenance. They came to Vishnu and complained about these demons. They were brothers. Their names were Shumba and Nishumba, and they loved each other. And they therefore were completely undefeatable because they supported each other in every way. So when the gods asked Vishnu to do something about it, Vishnu thought for a moment, and then he did something very clever. He transformed himself into a beautiful woman, which Vishnu is able to do. In fact, Vishnu is in many respects into cross-dressing. He likes to turn up in various forms, sometimes animal forms. This particular form, his feminine form, is known as Mohini. Mohini means the infatuating one or the enchanting one, and she actually represents the power of the Spanda to delude us by making the world look like something that we either want to grasp onto or push away from us. And the Mohini, this form of Vishnu as a woman, was so enchantingly beautiful that the story goes that when she walked, all the trees and grasses would bow down to her and the winds would blow around her. Everything in the universe wanted to be closer to her. And she walked into the grove where the two demons had their palace, walking with a very slow gait, like, as the story says, an intoxicated elephant. And when the two demons saw her, they, of course, fell hopelessly in love with her. So they both ran towards her simultaneously, and they each begged her to become his bride. Mohini looked from one demon to the other, and she said, "You're so handsome, you're so powerful, you're so attractive. I don't think I can choose between you. So what do you think? Why don't you have a contest? Why don't you have a fight? And I'll marry the one who wins." So you know how the story comes out. The two demons, without even thinking about the consequences of their actions, immediately began to wrestle, and because they were equally strong and highly motivated, within about half an hour, the two demons were lying at Mohini's feet. And she looked down at them and she said, "My God, these demons killed each other for love of me. I must be beautiful. I must be gorgeous. I must be enchanting." She ran to the pool in the middle of the courtyard and she looked at her reflection. And when she saw her reflection, just like everyone else who saw her, she fell in love. She became infatuated. But because she understood, or she believed, that this vision was a vision of herself, her first thought was, "Well, I have to find somebody who's worthy of me. I am clearly the most beautiful creature in all the world. I need an appropriate husband." So as she turned over the possibilities, she realized that the only person who was worthy of her was Lord Shiva, the divine yogi who at the time was meditating in his cave. This is when Shiva was still single. So Mohini transported herself to find Shiva's cave, and because she was God incarnate, in just a moment she was standing in the doorway, and when she arrived at the doorway, he opened his eyes. He saw her, and he said, "Yes, can I help you?" She said, "Oh, Shiva, I am Mohini, the most beautiful woman in the world, and you're the only being who is worthy to be my husband, so I've come to offer myself to you." And Shiva, of course, with his eye of wisdom, was able to recognize, to look behind the feminine form and realize who it was, and he said, "Excuse me, you can't marry me. You're not a woman. You're Vishnu. You're a god. In fact, you're the sustaining force of the universe." And Mohini, once Shiva had pointed this out to her, looked down at her body. Suddenly awareness dawned, and she realized, "Oh my God, I forgot myself. I made a mistake. I'm Vishnu. I'm divine reality." And she and Shiva burst out laughing, and she turned back into her masculine form. So this story, which I think you can recognize immediately as a parable about what happens to us when we embody, when the Spanda Shakti manifests as these bodies, even though we are in our essence made entirely of Shakti, we are made of God, we come into these bodies, and through the deluding power, the Mohini aspect of the Shakti, the Maya of the Shakti, we forget who we are, and we wander looking for a kind of fulfillment, whether it's love, romance, money, fame, great work, you know, all the many forms that fulfillment might seem to take, that will never fully satisfy us. And we wander until the voice of the guru reminds us of who we are. And another way of looking at this story is that Mohini, as the Shakti, as the divine feminine force of cosmic and individual power, creates these endlessly seductive stories about reality and stories about who we are, which completely mesmerize us, whether it's the story of I am like this and I am like that, or the story of our existential crisis, or the story of our national history, or, you know, the story of the international situations. All these stories that we tell ourselves about who we are, about what we need to make us happy, about what is true justice, about what is spiritual life, all these are stories we tell ourselves that further cement our experience of separation. And because of the power of the Mayic side of the Shakti, of the binding face of the Shakti, which are, of course, mediated through the neurological processes, you know, in our brains and nervous systems, that literally make the energy soup that is the world appear to be filled with separate objects and beings. All of these stories are the work of Mohini, the work of the divine Shakti. And yet, as the voice of the Guru, she frees us. And one of the ways that the tantras tell us that the empowerment of Shakti frees us is through mantra, is through the empowered mantra, which we have been working with throughout the first 6 weeks of the class, and which we're going to continue practicing with during this aspect of the class. And the mantra that we have been practicing with is a mantra that celebrates Shakti, the Divine Feminine, through the bijas, the seed syllables that are part of the mantra that we chanted at the beginning of the class, Om Aim Hrim Klim. And you can just begin to allow these sounds, Om Aim Hrim Klim, to flow in with the breath. And to flow out with the breath. As we were in our earlier meditation, thinking of the breath as a very subtle energy that was slowly and sweetly permeating the sensation of the body, the sensation of the chest, the vibrating sensations that of what we call the chest. In the same way, we can imagine that these mantras, Om Aim Hrim Klim, flowing with the breath, are actually infusing the breath with an even deeper, let's call it subtle sensation, feeling state of Shakti, of Spanda, of Goddess. These mantras really name the empowering qualities of Goddess as her power of inspiration and insight. Aim, her power of manifesting realities, especially the inner realities of liberated awareness, as Hrim, and allowing those liberating realities to permeate our whole body. And then with the syllable Klim, recognizing that the very essence of life is divine pleasure, Shakti's very life is divine pleasure. So allow that very subtle energy of breath mingling with the energy of the body, mingling with the energy of Om Aim Hrim Klim. We're going to practice with the mantras in the three centers, the three main spiritual centers in the body. So with the inhalation, draw in Om Aim Phim Klim, as though it were being drawn in through the center of your forehead. And then with the exhalation, see if you can allow Om Aim Phim Klim to reverberate from the center of the head, expanding outward beyond the bounds of the head. Feeling as though the sounds of the mantras are actually opening up this center. Now see if you can, with the next inhalation, allow the mantra to descend from the center of the head down to the center behind the breastbone. And begin to allow Om Aim Hrim Klim to reverberate behind the breastbone in the subtle center of the heart. If it's comfortable for you to allow the four syllables to resound with the inhalation and the exhalation, that's fine. If it's more comfortable to have the thought Om Aim flowing with the inhalation and Hrim Klim with the exhalation, that's fine too. Just see if you can feel the syllables reverberating in the heart. Now, for some of you, this may be a little bit more difficult, but just give it a shot. Feel with the next inhalation that the breath and the mantra flows down from the heart, down to the center at the core of the belly. Very deep in the belly. Just above the pubic bone, towards the back of the body, at the center that in the martial arts tradition is called the hara or the dantian. Let the breath flow into this center with Om Aim and flow out with Hrim Klim. Feeling that with each inhalation and exhalation and with the felt sense of mantra, you're allowing the liberating power in the Spanda Shakti to start to melt the feeling of density in the body. And as we practice with this mantra and with the breath, it's very helpful to have the fundamental understanding about what the tantras say that mantra is. You know, the tantras tell us that mantra is not just a collection of words. When a mantra is properly empowered, when the innate shakti within it has been kindled, has been awakened, which is the case with this mantra, it actually contains within it the power of these shaktis, these divine energies that it's calling upon. In other words, mantra, the sound form of these energies, is actually bringing alive the power of divine creativity, the power of pervasive manifestation that brings the sacred into every cell and molecule and quark and subatomic particle of the known and unknown universe, and the power of divine pleasure. And these mantras refer to aspects of the divine feminine that are known as the goddess Saraswati, whose power is contained in the mantra Ayim, the mantra of creativity. The goddess Lalita Tripura Sundari, whom we could call Lalita, who is the one who embodies herself into the universe, plays as the universe, and then draws the soul back into the complete oneness with its source. And Kleem, which is associated with the goddess Kali, who is the one who dissolves all this, and yet whose nature is divine pleasure. So this is Kali in a very pure form. So as you allow these mantra syllables to reverberate in your belly, just have the recognition or the intention to recognize that these syllables are imbued with goddess energy, with the power of creativity, the power of pervasive manifestation, of bringing the sacred into embodiment, and the power of divine pleasure. And that all of them are held together by Om, which is the sound of the formless divine consciousness known as Shiva. And we're going to talk for a couple of minutes, or for a few minutes, more than a couple of minutes, about a very esoteric and important process that has to do with embodying sacred sound. You know, in one of the things that we've come to recognize over the last several hundred years is that awakening, or that is to say the pure experience of our own divinity, has to happen fundamentally on every level of the body-mind. So for many people, an initial awakening may take place in the intellectual center as a recognition that you are not just this body and not just this conditioned self, but that you actually are pure awareness. We've been doing some meditations on that recognition. The awakening may take place in the heart, where it manifests as a feeling of very pervasive love and compassion and connectedness with other beings. Or it may manifest in the belly. And the awakening in the belly, which is very much a characteristic of awakenings in martial arts and in certain uncertain sects of Zen, is an awakening to a kind of wordless, instinctive connectedness that brings you very much into contact with the earth and with this formless, silent, energetic pulsation, which is the manifestation, really, of our deepest connection to the planet, but which is also one of the deep, deep doorways into the experience of Source. And in the tantric traditions, one of the esoteric pathways for understanding the journey that a human being takes is based on the understanding that sound, speech, mantra, creative sound rises from the deep center of being, which is identified in the human body with the Kundalini Shakti, the coiled energy that's lodged in the base of the spine, and that actually has an earthly analog in the fire at the center of the earth. And this level of sound is really sound as pure silence. So when you enter into this place, into this very deep space, here at the very root, the very core of the body, if you really enter into it, you discover that it's a place of profound silence, profound stillness, and profound power. And in the tradition, that sound, the sound that arises here, which is not even a sound because it's the deep silence at the heart of the universe, that silent sound is known as para speech, para meaning supreme. In other words, what the tradition says is that all sound arises out of silence. It arises not from some higher realm. It arises from the very depths of the body and the depths of the earth. In other words, the sounds that we experience as our own speech, as our own thoughts, actually emanate from a region of depth, a region of earthiness, a region of embodiment. And our felt experience is constantly, of course, being mediated through sound, through the vibratory experience of sound. So when we practice mantra as a spiritual practice that is meant to take us into our true depths, that is meant to connect us body, mind, spirit, intellectually, through our emotional body, at the heart, and through our profound power source at the root. The understanding is that the sacred sounds, and indeed all sounds, manifest out of this very core, this deep silence. They move upward to a level of sound that is called pasyanti, or seeing. They move up to the region of the heart and throat, where they manifest as thoughts in the mind, and then they come out the tongue as speech. So I want to say a little bit more about this, and then we're going to practice with it now and over the course of the week to come. So as we said, the primal level of speech, which is called para-vach, or para meaning supreme and vach meaning speech, is the sound of the primal consciousness singing to itself silently as it self recognizes its own blissfulness, its own unity. It's the silent sound of I am, I exist, the sound of pure being. So at this level, there is no articulation. It's simply vibration, feeling. Very few of us experience this in any kind of conscious way. But even when we don't recognize it as such, it is the existence of this level of speech as pure silent consciousness that actually allows us to recognize and communicate with each other. In other words, it's because we share that level of silence, that level of speech as pure consciousness, that our words and gestures make sense. Because the truth is that all of us are one at that level. So in the human body, according to the tantric tradition, this level, para-vach, is located in the subtle body, in the region corresponding to the base of the spine, to the perineum, the root, and it's said to be contained in the coiled, energetic light form that the tradition calls Kundalini Shakti, the coiled life force. And many of the hymns to Kundalini address her as the mother of mantras. So it's said that as Kundalini rests coiled in your Muladhara center, she's coiled around a subtle form of Shiva, and she sings. She sings, Aham, I am. She sings, Om, I'm, Hrim, Klim. She sings mantras. And out of that endless singing, that vibratory singing, which, though this sounds really esoteric, you can begin to hear, to experience as a kind of vibratory sense of, let's call it, intelligent insight that begins to be apparent to you when you meditate in this center, when you feel this center opening. So out of that endless silent singing of Kundalini, of Para, of Goddess, an impulse arises to speak, to bring forth sounds that have meanings. And this impulse that gives rise to sound is the dawning of that extraordinarily powerful aspect of Spanda that we call Mantrika Shakti, the sound powers that exist in the syllables of the alphabet that are the powers behind articulated speech. And as these, as this impulse to sound arises, it arises in the body to the area between the solar plexus and the heart. You know, in the ancient tradition, and nowadays we've come to hear it through our radio telescopes. The land itself, the earth itself, sings, you know, which is perhaps one of the ways that our ancestors experienced this para speech. So as this impulse to speech, this impulse to make sounds rises, again, as taking its seat in the area between the solar plexus and the heart, becomes the level of intuition. Of it's the level that we sometimes call gut knowing or intuitive knowing. Again, its seat is between the solar plexus and the heart. And here again, words have not taken form. This is really the level of intuitive knowledge. The name for it in Sanskrit is Paschanti. Paschanti, which Paschanti means the seed of, or the sprout of, or the first glimpse of knowingness, of speech. So we could say that it's that place within us where the impulse to speak comes from. And, you know, if you've ever had a moment when you felt just a deep impulse to say something that arose inside you and perhaps was unstoppable and just came out of your mouth as, you know, whatever comes out of your mouth, that if you pay attention to where that impulse to speech arises from, you begin to experience that intuitive sense of there's something that wants to be said, there's something that wants to be known, that's not yet in the form of an articulated thought and certainly not in the form of words. So that sprout of Paschanti speech that has no content, speech that is in the form of an impulse, that impulse towards speech at the Paschanti level, which again is connected to the heart, is said to be connected to what is called the causal body, this very subtle level of human consciousness, which is the level of experience that we mostly tune into in very deep sleep or in very deep unconscious states of meditation. So this is the level of the subconscious. And it's said in the tradition that the inner blueprint for our instinctual drives, our karmic drives, are all there in the causal body, just as in a computer there are source codes. So the causal body contains the source codes for our individual lives and our speech patterns. And the Paschanti speech arises from that source code. And what that means, and this is very important, is that when we feel an impulse to speak or when we have a sense of gut knowing, we don't always know whether that gut knowing comes from, let's call it, a pure place, or whether it comes from our conditioning, from the samskaras, from the conditioned, embedded thoughts and feelings that are an aspect of our woundedness, an aspect of our karmic propensities. And it's one of the reasons why trusting your gut is not, for many of us, not an entirely reliable way to make judgments until we've been through the process of purifying these levels of speech, which is what we do with mantra. So in any case, from this sprout, the intention to speak arises, and it rises up through the inner body, and it leads to a thought, actually to the creation of pre-articulated speech often. So this process takes place between the heart and the throat. Some of the people who shared in the last class talked about how they would, when they looked into their own consciousness field, when they looked into the experience of thoughts arising, they realized that they weren't experiencing actual articulate thoughts so much as experiencing a kind of movement. It's like a pre-thought thought, like a ripple of energy that wants to flow into a thought and that will eventually flow into a thought. But when you get very quiet and start looking into your own consciousness, you can start to experience this pre-articulate level of thought. And this pre-articulate level of thought is which we experience in the subtle body between the heart and the throat. Content and mental static start to appear. So those pre-thought thoughts begin to turn into actual articulated thoughts. And it's also where, you know, when the intuitions arising at Paschanti are creative, they begin to be articulated as creative impulses and ideas, as songs, as, you know, as everything that's beautiful and creative in our human capacity for speech. And so this impulse towards sound as speech arises as an intention, as an impulse. It takes form of thought, which then begins to form as words, that is, thoughts, the words, the thoughts that still are only being experienced inside yourself because they haven't been spoken. And those of you who, which is to say almost all of us, have probably noticed that there are many times when it feels as though there's blockage in the throat chakra, where there's a feeling of, you know, words that can't be spoken, or words that want to be spoken, or words that don't want to be spoken, that somehow collect as energies and form energetic blockages in the throat. One of the gifts that begins to arise in us as we practice with these mantras and these sacred sounds is that whatever blocks there may be in this center, this third center of speech, begin to dissolve. So this third level of speech, which is really the level of pre-thought thought and then of articulated thought, is called madhyama. Madhyama means the middle level. Again, its place in the subtle body is between the heart chakra and the throat chakra. And then what happens is, as the impulse to speech arises, thoughts come out of your mouth as articulated words. And in other words, they come out of the tongue and they take form in the mouth and come out as manifest sounds, articulated sounds. Articulated sound, this level of speech, is called vaikari, which means hard. In other words, it's the words and sounds made by striking something against something else. And there are actually two kinds of articulate sound. There's the sound called dvani, D-H-V-A-N-I, which is sound without words. The clapping sound, the sound of a dog barking, a cat meowing. You know, in other words, the speech it's the sound of the wind blowing, it's the sound of bamboo trees crackling against each other, of, you know, tree trunks, the sound they make as they sway in the wind. These are all, they're articulate sounds, but they don't have content, they're at least not content that we can understand. The second kind is called varana, that is sound with meaning, the articulated speech of human beings. And when I say this, of course, people who understand animal sounds know that animals actually are communicating in language. They're, so to speak, talking about something. Most of us don't understand that language. But the point is that all sound arises out of silence, the silence of Paravach, in the same way. There's silence, then there's the seed impulse, the intention to make sound, very, very subtle, and then that movement begins to kind of condense itself at subtle pre-thought thought or pre-sound sound, and then it comes out. And there's a continuous process of sounds arising from deep within us, arising up through these different levels, manifesting as thoughts in the mind. We know about that, and manifesting as speech, and it's always going on. For most of us, it's unconscious. So, in the process of sound as yoga, in the yoga of sound, and in the yoga of mantra, of music, music as yoga. It can be done in three ways. First, at the highest level, we practice sound yoga, the yoga of speech, by becoming aware of the presence of the paravach in all speech and sound. So in the Indian musical tradition, and those of you who are at Esalen with me and Sylvia and Akash last week, experience that. A musician or singer is trained to listen to the sounds coming out of silence. And this is an incredibly powerful practice for us to do in our lives, is to begin to tune into the silence between sounds, the silence around sounds. And I'm inviting you to do this now, listening to my words while tuning into the silent space between the words. And when you get really good at this, you can actually begin to feel the silence inside the words. And when you become conscious of the levels of speech as a practice, you can begin to tune into the silence that lies within and behind your own words. In other words, to listen to yourself as you speak and see if you can become aware of the fact that if you really tuned in, if you really turned inward, you can actually start to feel words taking form out of silence. And another, a second way, those were two ways of the first way, that is tuning into the silence behind speech, which is actually the doorway into the unmanifest presence within our manifest life. And the second way is to consciously start to bring your attention deeper into the body. We do this, we were doing this in the meditation we did a few minutes ago, and it's one of the practices that is very much a part of the tantric arsenal of practices. So to bring your awareness with the breath and the mantra from the center of the head into the heart, then down to the region between the second chakra and the root, or even down to the root, and this will tend to activate the inner body at different levels. And then as you coordinate the mantra with the breath and feel the mantra repeating itself on these different levels of the inner body, you begin to experience the power of the mantra awakening you at these levels. And these awakenings are very real, very profound, and very much connected with our ability to embody the highest consciousness. And the third way of practicing the yoga of the levels of speech is simply to practice mantra, tune deeply into the mantra, and to let the mantra itself bring your awareness deeper. For many of us, mantra practice seems a little bit artificial, a little bit indirect. And the reason that it does is because essentially we're keeping the mantra separate from our consciousness and from our body. So the inner practice of mantra, repetition of mantra practice, is to become very conscious of the felt sense of the sounds in mantra, to discover where you actually experience the vibratory quality of mantra. And you can do this with a spoken sound. I'm actually doing it now as I speak. And as I speak, I feel how the words I'm using, or the energy in the words I'm using, are vibrating at the level around my throat, literally around my around that U-shaped bone in the throat. And as I have the intention to move my speech deeper, I can begin to feel the resonance of these words, the sounds of these words resonating behind the breastbone from behind the heart. So when you're practicing this mantra this week, you'll begin by practicing it in a kind of I wouldn't call it mechanical, but in a subtly articulate way. In other words, you'll be saying the syllables to yourself. It will be a distinct activity that you're doing with the mind. And what I'm going to suggest that you be aware of as you practice with the mantra is a couple of things. First, the felt sense that arises when you let the mantra mingle with the breath, a breath that's infused with Om Aim Hrim Klim, is a breath that's infused with awakened awareness, because these sounds are filled with awakened awareness. And just notice what happens to your breath as you coordinate the mantras with the breath. And little by little, as you say the mantras, you can begin to have the feeling that they are being repeated on their own. And you can let them flow deeply in the center of the head. And bring your awareness down to the heart and let the mantra be repeated with the sense that it's flowing in the heart. And then begin to bring your sense of mantra down into the region at the core of the pelvis, or even down at the root. And see if you can imagine that the mantra is being repeated there. And this is a way of deliberately and consciously beginning to suggest to your body and your consciousness the experience of allowing articulate sound or precisely thought words to descend from the level of vaikari, which is articulate sound, to the level of madhyama, which is sound that is being experienced as much more of an energy, just below precise articulation. And then see if you can bring them, as you bring the mantra down to the Pashyanti level in the heart, noticing the feeling of the breath and the mantra sounds vibrating in the heart. you start to notice that very naturally a couple of things will happen. The sound will start to slur and the mentor will stop feeling so separate from you. And this will happen on its own eventually. What will also happen is that the mantra will begin to repeat itself. And I know that all of you who worked with mantra have this experience. It's like you don't have to remember to say the mantra. The mantra is there. The mantra is repeating itself. It comes up. And what this means in terms of our development is that the mantra has descended from the deliberate conscious level, the vaikari level, down to the level of majjhima, the level of the level just below the throat, and then down to the paschanti level, the level of the heart. And the more this happens, the more you let yourself stay with this process of letting the mantra repeat itself, in the heart with the breath, you'll find that the mantra stops being articulated words and actually becomes a feeling state. So Om Aim Hrim Klim loses its distinctiveness but begins to reveal itself as a very subtle and very beautiful, very sacred feeling of energy expanding through your heart and your body. And at a certain point, and this is an experience that we're going to play with a little bit next week, mantra stops being a practice and starts to infuse your mind and begins to be experienced as a kind of a sort of sacred feeling vibratory essence. So, in other words, your inner body itself becomes imbued with the energy of the mantra. And over time, through mantra practice, through meditation, there comes a moment where this sacred speech, with its power to penetrate through the knots of blocked energy and lack of understanding of who we are, this empowered sound penetrates deeper and deeper into your being. And begins to transform all the particles and molecules of your embodied consciousness. So it's not just transforming your mental apparatus, it's actually transforming the neurons, the dendrites, the whole subtle apparatus that makes up your body-mind. And what you find is that the more the mantra seeps into your body, the more your awareness ascends into the body, the more your words, the words you speak in ordinary life, have power. The more they come from this, from the openings that arise as the mantra descends, the more you are able to speak with the kind of power that makes your words true and that gives your voice and your words authority, that gives you the capacity to be heard. So I think we all have heard singers who have this power. We've all heard teachers who have this power, and this is different from ordinary charisma. You know, there are a lot of people who have a lot of charisma and who can speak with strength and power. You know, their prana is strong. There's another level of this which comes from mastery of mantra, and the great sacred singers of the Indian tradition and other traditions had realized this power almost unconsciously by allowing sacred sound to penetrate deeper and deeper into their body. And in all the traditions, it's said that certain masters have the gift for having their words come from this intuitive level of awareness and finally from the level of silence. One of the things my teacher used to say about what gives a guru, a spiritual master, the power to awaken people through mantra is that the mantra has descended down into just through the Pashyanti intuitive level and touched into the space of silence. And as you meditate with mantra, you'll find that it does actually do that. The mantra will dissolve into silence. And if you can really stay present in the inner body and stay present with the vibration that arises as the mantra syllables dissolve into silence, rather than, you know, letting yourself get lost in stray thoughts, you will find more and more that mantra practice not only dissolves you in meditation, not only enhances your meditation, it also begins to, and this is crucially important, it also begins to dissolve all the vasanas, the embedded, contracted, conditioned thoughts and feelings that are lodged inside the causal body and that create the distortions in our viewpoint and the distortions in our ways of seeing ourselves and the distortions in our relations with others. So we're going to practice again for the last few minutes of our class with the mantra Om Aim Rim Klim. And sitting in a meditative posture, bring your awareness to that place in the base of the throat where you actually can feel the breath. You know, as the breath flows in through the nostrils, it touches this space in the throat, space at the base of the throat. It's very natural. And feel Om Aim Hrim Klim reverberating with the breath there at the level of the throat. And again, if it's more comfortable, inhale with Om Aim and exhale with Hrim Klim. But see if you can feel the way the breath and the sound, the mantric sounds, can be felt inside the throat center. You don't have to concentrate too hard. Just locate your attention in the throat and feel or hear the mantra flowing in with the breath into that center. Feel the sensations of the syllables and the breath, the energy of them in the throat. Now begin to feel the breath flowing deeper so that you begin to hear the mantra reverberating in the area below, behind your sternum, between the solar plexus and the upper sternum. Feeling it vibrating through the chest, even down to the region of the diaphragm. Om Aim Hrim Klim. Just letting the breath deepen so that the mantra vibrates in whatever way it wants to, somewhere between the heart and the solar plexus. And allowing your belly to be soft. See if you can let the breath and the mantra begin to open up the region at the very core of the pelvis, at the root. Om Aim Hrim Klim. With attention, there at the very root of your body, in that region between the perineum and the ileal crest, inside the pelvic cavity. Om Aim Hrim Klim. Noticing the felt sense of breath and mantra in that part of your body. Allowing the energy in the syllables, which is the energy of the sacred liberating power of the Spanda Shakti. Feel it mingling with the energy of breath, which is also an aspect of the Spanda. Mingling with the energy, the spanda of your inner body. Focusing on the sensation, the felt sense of mantra, breath, and the feeling of your inner body. Just allowing now your attention and the mantra to settle in whatever part of the inner body it wants to. So that the mantra is not something that you're imposing on yourself, but a sacred, loving, felt experience of sound energy that flows with the breath, flows into the subtle energy of your inner body, and travels to those regions of the body that call it, that want to be opened and felt into with the power of Om Aim Hrim Klim and your sacred breath, the sacred Shakti of breath and sound, entering the sacred Shakti of body. When that power, that divine power, is recognized and set on its own path, this very power bestows the fruits of yoga. Have a beautiful evening, a beautiful week. You'll be getting a homework assignment, and those of you who would like a partner, a study partner, you can let Deb know and she will get you together with an appropriate person. Thank you so much.